Yona Nurosha Prishya Rosham Dahanta Mutatena Dahantya Satyam Soyam Matanta Amalam Ravisham Babeti Amakatam Punarasya Mana Shreita. Translation. Great stalwarts like Lord Shiva can, by their wrathful glances, overcome lust and vanquish him. Yet they cannot be free from the overwhelming effects of their own wrath. Such wrath can never enter into the heart of him, the Lord, who is above all this. So how can lust take shelter in his mind? Purport. When Lord Shiva was engaged in severely austere meditation, Cupid, the demigod of lust, threw his arrow of sex desire. Lord Shiva, thus being angry at him, glanced at Cupid in great wrath, and at once the body of Cupid was annihilated. Although Lord Shiva was so powerful, he was unable to get free from the effects of such wrath. But in the behavior of Lord Vishnu, there is no incident of such wrath at any time. On the contrary, Bhrigu Muni tested the tolerance of the Lord by purposely kicking his chest. But instead of being angry at Bhrigu Muni, the Lord begged his pardon, saying that Bhrigu Muni's leg might have been badly hurt because his chest is too hard. The Lord has the sign of the foot of Bhrigupada as the mark of tolerance. The Lord, therefore, is never affected by any kind of wrath. So how can there be any place for lust, which is less strong than wrath? When lust or desire is not fulfilled, there is the appearance of wrath. But in the absence of wrath, how can there be any place for lust? The Lord is known as Aptakama, or one who can fulfill his desires by himself. He does not require anyone's help to satisfy his desires. The Lord is unlimited, and therefore his desires are also unlimited. All living entities but the Lord are limited in every respect. How then can the limited satisfy the desires of the unlimited? The conclusion is that the Absolute Personality of Godhead has neither lust nor anger. And even if there is sometimes a show of lust and anger by the Absolute, it should be considered an absolute benediction. Om Gana Chimadandasya, Gana Jana Shalakaya, Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasani. Gaur Bhaktavinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We see in the topmost personalities, like Lord Shiva, someone seeks to agitate material desires. What a different standard this is than the so-called human civilization we have today. Today, if someone seeks to agitate your material desires, you're very happy. And you give that person your benediction. Thank you for increasing my material desires. Thank you for, first of all, recognizing my material desires. This is considered the Kali Yuga panacea. Recognize someone's material desires, and then you are the person's greatest well-wisher. This is at the core of so many relationship problems. Do you recognize my material desires? your purpose. That's your function. What has happened? You have not picked up on my material desires. What is the point in this relationship? This is the contemporary Kali Yuga standard. Whereas in real human civilization, in Vedic culture, the whole point of all the ashrams, the whole point of any kind of relationship is how to purify the material desires, not how to multiply them, agitate them, increase them. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, the yogi is someone who acts with all components of his existence, body, mind, intelligence, for the purpose of purification. So that is the essence of all the ashram, purification. And indeed, that is the essence of naishkarma, performing activities and not seeking to enjoy the fruits. The whole point is purification. Now, why would you consider that the main mission in your life is purification? You would think like that when you understand that having a material body is a disease. It is not that the material body gets diseases. No. The material body is a disease which gets more diseases. So, of course, this understanding runs contrary to current degraded mentalities in which you consider the body to be a gift from either God or nature for your enjoyment. And you are convinced that this world owes you pleasure, gratification, and enjoyment. And of course, what happens when you don't get that gratification, when you don't get that enjoyment, it doesn't match your expectations, you become angry. Some very interesting social research has come out lately that shows that the real danger for political uprising, the real danger for revolutions, for the citizens becoming disturbed and overthrowing their government, the real danger does not come from the poor people. That's generally the fear. Poor people, they're agitated by not having sufficient subsistence, and therefore the poor people will gather together and overthrow the government or confiscate the properties and industries of the wealthy. But the latest research shows actually that's not true. Where is the greatest potential source of social agitation? It's not in the poor, it's in the middle class. Why? Because when the middle class, by virtue of being middle class, they get a taste of some opulence, and then when the economy goes down, they flip out. They've had a taste, and now it's being diminished due to economic decline, higher taxes, whatever. They totally flip out, and they're the ones who cause the commotion. Just like in India, there's this fear. Whenever I go to India, devotees tell me, what will happen if the masses don't have anything? Yet they're watching on TV, and they're seeing all this opulence, which can never be theirs. What will happen if some demagogue agitates them? In mass, they storm the government, they storm the shops and industries. Oh, there'll be great commotion. But actually, according to the latest social research, the real worry is not the poor. The real worry is the new middle class. Because they have tasted. But then, what they're tasting is yanked away. Just like now in India, because of more stringent economic atmosphere, people's purchasing power has declined. the new middle class, is not able to consume as they did before. In other words, when you rise up and become the new middle class, your expectations are partially fulfilled and you have more expectations. But the greatest fear in life is what? Falling back from what you already have. So those are the ones who cause the commotion, the new middle class. In other words, their desires are being denied. And this cannot be tolerated, especially since you have a taste of your desires being partially fulfilled. So this shows you something about the nature of the lust-anger cycle. What does Krishna explain in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita? First, you contemplate the objects of the senses. Jayatokasya. Then, from that contemplation, attachment develops. And then, from attachment, lust develops. The lust develops in such a way that you can no longer discriminate needs from wants. That's the great benediction of society today. If you want something, that means you need it. Whereas, traditionally, needs were things like food, water, some kind of shelter, some kind of cloth to wrap around you. Now, needs are whatever you want. If you want it, you need it. So obviously that kind of mentality, when it meets frustration, and it must meet frustration, will cause great havoc, individually and collectively. So Krishna points out that when there is lust, there must be anger. Now you might say, why? And of course, so-called human civilization today, they will say, lust is just something that happens of its own accord. It's just an expression of the human spirit. It shows vitality. It shows energy. In the Western world, people will compliment you. You have such a lust for life. I don't know, maybe someone's told you that. You show such vitality. You're so full of desire. And of course, employers, they want to see that in the persons they hire. The human resources administrators, when they interview someone, they want to see how much do you have this lust to get ahead. How much do you have this lust to want more and more? Because if we see you're lusty, then we know you're going to work hard to fulfill your life. I often tell the story of one devotee. He had finished his master's degree in internet and technology at the University of Manchester in the UK, and he was applying for his PhD. So he was interviewed by the persons administering the PhD program that he was applying for. And in the middle of the interview, the lecturer, the professor who was in charge of the program, looked at him and said, "Are you sure that you have the massive desire that it takes to complete a PhD? You're too peaceful. You just don't register with us that you have any strong urges to dominate, to get ahead. So how are you going to be successful in this PhD program? You're too peaceful, you're too calm, you're too composed. These are not qualities that are suitable for progress." So the professors who interviewed him were doubtful. "We don't know if you have what it takes. Your marks, your grades are very high, but that's not everything. High grades, not everything. You have to have that lust." recommended by your previous authorities, we will accept him. So then once he was accepted in the PhD program for internet technology, the head professor wanted to impart some Divya Gyan, some divine knowledge to him. She felt compassionate upon him. You're very mild, you're very self-controlled, you're doing all your research very nicely. Because the research actually that's done at the PhD level is it's a cheap way for multinational corporations to get some problem solved. So what they do is, instead of paying someone in their own laboratories to do the research, instead they say, we are so charitable, we'll give this university some money because we support higher education. And then the university understands that they have to engage PhDs in solving the multinational problems. So it's a cheap way. It's all money. Even though they call it PhD, it's all about getting the labor done more cheaply. So the head of the PhD department, she took a liking to him. You're a nice young man. But let me tell you, you don't understand how the world works. It's not so much what your actual performance is. It's all about who you know. So therefore, you've got to not simply do your PhD work. You need to socialize, go to academic conferences. And the, what is the main point, she told him, of academic conferences? Drinking. The research must be there, but that is secondary, tertiary. The number one thing is drinking together. And in this way, human knowledge advances. So you see that in today's society, controlling your mind and senses is not valuable. People want to see lust. They want to see that you're ready to slave for lust, because then they know you'll work hard, you'll advance the mission of the employer. In other words, people do not understand the destructiveness of lust. They consider lust to be an honor. And they're raising their children in that way. Oh, now you are 13 or 14. Very good. Now you can really open up to what life is all about. What do you expect parents to say? They grew up thinking like that, so they want to pass the benediction to their children. Just be lusty in an appropriate way. That is considered civilization. What is Krishna teaching us in Bhagavad Gita? That where there is lust, there must be wrath. We need the education, the transcendental education, to see that. Why must there be wrath following lust? Because the material desires can never be fulfilled satisfactorily. You only get the promise of fulfillment, but there's always this big gap between promise and delivery. The delivery is always lacking in the fullness that you expected. So therefore you get angry. But you never figure out that the problem is with having material desires in the first place. So the Bhagavatam's program is to purify the material desires, and then there won't be anger. Because, as the purport points out here, anger is more difficult to subdue than lust. The point is made that, for example, in reference to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is never affected by any kind of wrath, so how can there be any place for lust which is less strong than wrath? So we would ordinarily think that the main problem is lust. And indeed, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that lust is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. Nevertheless, there's something stronger than even the lust, which must follow the lust, and that is anger. So it is a great lesson for us to understand that material desires can never be satisfactorily fulfilled. This is torture. So you're wondering, well then, why do we have these desires if they're never going to be satisfactorily fulfilled? These desires are the symptom of our disease. Because of that disease, we enthusiastically volunteer for, do you know what Chinese water torture is? Yeah? Chinese water torture. What they do is they strap you to a bed and then they have a water tap over your head, and out from the water tap comes one drop, one drop, one drop, just Now you may say, oh, what's the problem with that? But if it just goes on and on, hours after hours, days after days, it drives you crazy. It's just one drop of water hitting your head, another drop. You actually just become totally disoriented. So that is what the attempt to fulfill material desires is. We're signing up for that kind of water torture. But we don't see it that way, just like we think, what's wrong? What's the big deal about water torture? Just a drop of water constantly falling on your head, one after another. It's not the best thing in life, but it's not the worst. So similarly, we think that about material desires. Not the best thing, but not the worst. It's something you have to go through. But we don't see the torture that such desires bring about. So, I was once explaining at a Bhagavatam class in Mumbai at ISKCON Calcutta. There are two approaches to lust, to material desires. The Western approach and the Indian approach. The Western approach is Kama Sindhu. Just drown in the ocean of lust. You see the ocean there, just plunge in deeply without hesitation. Just lose yourself in the ocean. And the Indian approach is the Kama Bindu. One drop at a time. Don't overdo it, but have a steady trickle. More civilized, this is more culture. Oh, but those people in the West, they just overdo it. So in both cases, no one is disputing the whole issue of lust. It's simply, how do you go about it? Do you drown in it, or do you have a steady one bindu after another? Neither is accepted in Bhagavatam. As pointed out in the seventh or ninth canto, steady drops of ghee on the fire, what effect do they have on the fire? The fire just blazes even more. So therefore we need to understand whether it's Kama Sindhu approach or the Kama Bindu approach, we need to get to the roots of the whole problem. Because there must be anger either way. When we look at the world situation, we see that political leaders, representing the people who elect them, think that by increasing the desires of people, there'll be world peace. economies develop more and more, and people will get more and more of what they want, and they'll be satisfied with their leaders, they'll be satisfied with their situation. This, of course, is a complete illusion. The more you agitate people's material desires, the more angry they become. There is no such thing as world peace through sense gratification. That is what today's consumer societies are propagating. The more you buy, the more you purchase, the more you seek fulfillment through consumerism, the more you'll be peaceful. No, the more angry you must become. And therefore, the fire of war explodes from time to time, and no one can figure out the cause. They think the cause of wars is some dispute in which both sides cannot solve. Actually, the cause of war is material desire, which cannot be satisfactorily fulfilled, and therefore there is anger. So war is the manifestation of anger, which comes from unfulfilled material desires. That means whether the war is between two nations or more, or war in a relationship between husband and wife, friend and friend. Just try to understand the anger that rises in you when someone doesn't meet your expectations. It's intolerable. You shake with anger. After all I've done for you, after all I've tolerated from you, after all I've sacrificed for you, yet you have not fulfilled me satisfactorily. So war can happen in many ways, not simply between nations. Strife, anger, rancor is a daily occurrence where the gratification of material desires is considered an honor. Considered a benediction. Yet Bhagavad Gita says that having a material body is a disease, and seeking to fulfill that material body furthers the disease. Therefore, again, the yogi is one who acts with body, mind, and intelligence simply for the purpose of purification. We want to become cured. We regret our karmic past, how it has scarred us with so many artificial desires which can never be fulfilled. People go to the movies, whether it's Bollywood or Hollywood, and they see so many things on the movie screen. They begin to think that, yes, this is what life is like. When will I get what I see on the movie screen? And of course, because they're not going to get what's on the movie screen, because what's on the movie screen is that, the people become angry in their relationships. They don't say, or sometimes they do say, I know cases where persons do say, I want a relationship like in the movies. You're not giving that to me. Mostly they don't say, but this notion is embedded in the consciousness. It must be. They see so much movies, so much TV. You think that just, goes over their head? No, it goes inside the head. And forms the core reality, their core internal reality. So this verse in Bhagavatam is recognizing the anger problem. We spoke about how great stalwarts like Lord Shiva become angry if someone seeks to agitate their material desires. What a different standard of civilization. Today, you become angry if no one seeks to agitate your material desires. You feel your life is a failure. What's going on? We spoke yesterday about Narayan Rishi. how Indra became afraid of the penances done by Narayana Rishi. Narayana Rishi specializes in severe austerities, penances, demonstrating the path of Naishkarma, activities which have no material reaction. So Indra, mistaking the incarnation of Godhead, this twin incarnation of Godhead, known as Narayana Rishi, mistook him for an ordinary person, and Indra was afraid. Your austerities are becoming so intense, you can take my post. Indra was in anxiety, showing that even in the heavenly planets, the Lord of Heaven has worries, has anxieties. So Indra knew exactly what to do. He dispatched Cupid, accompanied by heavenly planet girls, to allure Narayana Rishi. But when they got in the presence of Narayana Rishi, as we explained yesterday, they were overwhelmed by the gravity of Narayana Rishi, and they began to realize, we have made a mistake. We have been sent on a mission that is completely improper. This Narayana Rishi is not an ordinary person. They realize that. Yet, did Narayana Rishi become angry at these accommodating and his associates who were seeking to agitate his material design? No. He spoke very sweetly to them. You've come to my ashram. That's very nice. I should offer something to you because you've come to my ashram. Completely cool and transcendental. I'll give you something. Watch this. And from the body of Narayana Rishi emanated countless beautiful women of all varieties. Just emanated from his body. In other words, it's just like you try to tempt the devotee who makes the milk sweets for the deity. After the milk sweets are offered, you try to tempt the devotee, which is like a milk sweet. I see no sweets, I reward you. Similarly, how can you tempt the source of all beauty? That's what Bhagavan means, the source of six opulences unlimitedly. So Narayana Rishi showed, how can you tempt me with some heavenly planet girls? Look what's coming from me. Countless ladies, much more beautiful, which put all you beauties from the heavenly planets to shame. And indeed, Cupid and his associates, the heavenly planet girls, they felt ashamed. The girls felt, our beauty is nothing compared to what's emanating, the beautiful girls emanating from the form of Narayana Rishi. And remember how hospitable Narayana Rishi is. You're in my ashram, I must offer you something. So he told the demigods, you see all these ladies coming, emanating from me? Pick whichever one you want. You can have it. So this is how cool and transcendental the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. He was not angry because Indra sought to agitate his material desire. How can Narayana Rishi have any material desires? He has no material body. There was another occasion when Indra became paranoid. Complex character, Indra. He became paranoid about the great sage Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi, in his ashram on the northern side of the Himalayas, was performing severe austerities for the period of 6 manvantaras, 6 reigns of Manu. So by the time the reign of number 7 Manu came, Indra was very worried. This has gone on too long. This is too too much. He's going to take my post. So Indra again knew what to do. He called for his team. Kamadev. Not simply Kamadev, Cupid, but also Indra sent along with Kamadev, Spring, and he sent along musicians, singers, dancers, all very beautiful. And their goal was one, to agitate Marcandeya Rishi and cause him to fall down. Let him become overwhelmed with material desires. So Marcandeya Rishi is sitting in meditation in his ashram. Beautiful ashram. He's surrounded by his associates, sages, sadhus. Nature is so beautiful. But then, something extraordinary happens. This is all arranged by Indra. Suddenly, the sweetest of breezes begins to blow. And the breezes are laden with droplets of water from the neighboring waterfalls. And the breezes are carrying the scent of sandalwood. So that's attack number one by Indra. Because there's a sensation of touch, which is agitated by pleasant breezes. Just like when people go on vacations to some tropic isle. Oh, they can get sunshine plus pleasant breezes. Oh, this is heavenly. Like in Hawaii. Prabhupada said, if there's any place on earth that's like the heavenly planets, it's Hawaii. So every afternoon in Hawaii, sea breeze blows containing droplets of moisture. Very pleasing to the senses. So that's what Indra sent to Marcandeya Rishi. He's in meditation, Marcandeya Rishi. And then this beautiful breeze is blowing, caressing breeze, droplets of water, and also carrying the scent of sandalwood. And remember, attack number two, Indra also sent springtime. Springtime inspires everyone to wake up your senses. It's time to enjoy even more. You might have gone a little dormant during the winter. Is it like that in Melbourne? When is springtime? September? Yes. So you feel proud of yourself. You survived the cold of the winter. Now spring is coming. Spring is nice because it doesn't get hot like it's supposed to get hot today. So springtime means the awakening of your senses. They become more alive, fresh. That's what springtime does. So this particular spring that Indra sent acted on the night. It produced the most beautiful spring night. Even though it was nighttime, all the flowers were blossoming. Creepers and vines were becoming luxurious. Remember, the breeze is blowing. The moon is shining brilliantly in the sky. Springtime, springtime. And then what else? There were musicians playing beautiful music. There were dancers, dancing girls. All this was thrown at Marcandeya Rishi. But that wasn't all. There was a particular Apsara, heavenly planets girl, and she was extraordinarily beautiful, form she had, and the form was covered just by a thin piece of cloth. So while springtime is there attacking Marcandeya Rishi, the breezes, the luxurious flowers and creepers, and the musicians, and then the dancing girls, there was this special heavenly planet girl, thinly covered by a cloth, and she was bouncing a ball, moving her body in such an alluring way. While all this other stuff is going on, and then suddenly a breeze blows, and the thin cloth is blown away. Cupid was waiting for that moment. right at that moment, because Cupid, as the girl started to dance, right before the breeze blew her thin cloth away, Cupid had ready his arrow on his bow. He was waiting. So when the breeze blew off her thin cart, blew off her thin garment, damn Cupid, put the mark in Aries. The arrow of Cupid has five heads. And these five heads of the arrow of Cupid will teach you something about the nature of material desire. What are the five heads of Cupid's arrow? Let's see if I remember them all. Bewilderment, agitation, suffering, becoming dried up, and exhilaration. So if you can understand that, you see how the lust works. It seems like you become exhilarated, you become lively, but there's the other four parts of the arrow. Suffering, agitation, bewilderment, drying up. So this is what drives people crazy about expressing their lusty desires. They want just the exhilaration. The exhilaration offers so much promise, so much hope. But there, don't forget the other four arrowheads. You have to take the whole package. An example Srila Prabhupada gives is sweet rice. Everyone knows what sweet rice tastes like. But sweet rice mixed with sand. So you lift up the cup of sweet rice. So nice. Especially if the sweet rice is cooked very slowly. Done with milk straight from the cow, it's so, and also the sweet rice is cold. Oh, it's luxurious. So you're tasting the sweet rice. Oh, this is going to be so nice. But then what? Crunch, crunch, crunch. It's got sand in it. So you're hooked on the flavor of the sweet rice, but the sand, you want to get beyond the sand. So you keep drinking. I'll just drink more, and this crunch will go away. Get past the sand. I must drink more. It tastes so good. But crunch, crunch, crunch. Very frustrating. So that's what Cupid's arrow does. It's five-headed. It's not just the exhilaration. You have to take the other four arrowheads too. Suffering, agitation, bewilderment, becoming dried up. So if you can study this situation, you can save yourself so much trouble. So Cupid, fire, is five-headed. What was Markandeya's reaction to all this? This whole production, springtime, breezes, scented with sandalwood, droplets of water in the breezes, musicians, dancing girls, and this special heavenly planets girl who's now totally unclad, moving before him. Markandeya Rishi started to become affected a little bit. He started to become, he noticed material desires are starting to rise in me. So immediately he became angry. How dare them try to agitate material desires in me? But he controlled that lust and anger. It was just minuscule, tiny, and he totally controlled it. But his first reaction, he started to get angry. How dare you disturb me? How dare you try to pollute me? Seeing his self-control, all these factors that Indra sent to attack Markandeya Rishi, the musicians, the dancers, the heavenly planet girl, they all left and they went back to report to Indra. Extraordinary personality. Then Narayana Rishi came and approached Markandeya Rishi, and Markandeya Rishi offered prayers to Narayana Rishi. The Supreme Personality Godhead came because he was very pleased by the response of Markandeya Rishi, who controlled both lust and anger. So again, this is a very important concept for us. is pointed out in the purport how the Supreme Personality of God is Aptakama, one who can fulfill his desires by himself. That is what it means to be completely independent. But how can we say we are independent? We are relying on so many living entities to help fulfill our desires. And therefore, we get angry because they disappoint us, even though we have to rely on them. You become angry at your children. Why aren't your children fulfilling your expectations? You become angry at your husband or wife. You cannot go through material life without being angry, because you must be unfulfilled. You must be disappointed. But the Supreme Personality of God, Bhagavan, relies on no one to satisfy his desires. And that's what Narayan Rishi showed when he emanated countless heavenly beauties from his body. What do I need you for? What do I need? Anything that Cupid has to offer. I can do better than that instantly. Producing the most gorgeous beauties. You want one? Take one. You come to my ashram, I must give you something. To actually understand the science of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we must understand that Krishna has desire, but he's completely independent in fulfilling his desire. Therefore, he's never frustrated. He never goes outside of himself. This is what it means to be Om Purna, perfect and complete. You know, Isha Upanishad is stated, Om Purnamada Purna. The Supreme Absolute is perfect and complete, and even though so many complete units emanate from him, still he remains perfect and complete. This understanding must be there about the science of the Supreme. Another terminology is given in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He wants you to understand that the real qualification of Bhagavan is not simply to be the controller. That understanding, Ishvara Parma Krishna, Bhagavan as controller, is a preliminary understanding. But beyond that is a deeper concept, a deeper understanding, that the Supreme Absolute Truth has unlimited desires and the unlimited resources and abilities to satisfy all of his unlimited desires. So I often point out, how many desires do you recognize you have? It's hard to get up to 10. Just try now. I want a nice house. I want nice children. More income, I want a better car, okay. I want nice personal happiness and gratification. All right, you're up to 5 now. Then what? Okay, for my mother, father, and extended family, I want things for them. And then what? Okay, world peace, good economy. It's hard to get up to 10, isn't it? So therefore, we don't understand what it means to have unlimited desires. But that is Bhagavan. We are tiny samples of Bhagavan. Krishna has unlimited desires, and he has the unlimited means to fulfill all of his unlimited desires. That is God. So Chaitanya Charitamrita describes this ability Suraja Lakshmi, to be completely independent in fulfilling unlimited desires, to be totally self-reliant. So that is a higher understanding of the science of the Supreme than simply accepting Krishna as the ultimate controller. We can take this a step further. In our endeavors to enjoy in this material world, there must be futility. must fail, and therefore we're angry. Why must we fail? Because we have a limited capacity as an enjoyer. We are part of Bhagavan Sri Krishna, the supreme enjoyer. Because we are part, we also have an enjoying tendency. But it's tiny. If you can grasp this, you'll see where all the frustration is coming from. Our ability to act as the enjoyer is so tiny, and that's where the frustration comes. We don't have a big enough capacity to enjoy. But we never realize that. Therefore, we blame the other person, blame society. But the real issue is our constitutional position is to be the enjoyer. Only because we are part of Bhagavan do we have a slight enjoying capacity. But that enjoying capacity only functions properly when it seeks to give enjoyment to Krishna. But when we independently try to act on our enjoying capacity, we suffer because it's too tiny. In other words, we're impotent, we're incompetent in terms of trying to enjoy it by our constitutional position. We don't have what it takes. So how many lifetimes is required for us to understand? So in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam enlightens us about all aspects of existence. Wrath can never enter the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he is always successful in carrying out unlimited desires. Even he may seem to be angry in some lila, some pastime, but that is just for his own pleasure. And everyone benefits by whatever display of characteristics comes from Krishna. Everyone 100% benefits. Can we say that about our characteristics being displayed? No. They're not all auspicious. Lokamangalam, auspicious for the whole world. No. But every trait, every characteristic of Bhagavan Sri Krishna is beneficial for everyone 100%. Even when he seems to be angry. Even when he marries 16,108 wives, everyone benefits.